It's Thursday, 15th of February, and you're listening to the Greencast. I'm your host, Ace, and joining me are Dominoid. Dominoid. Hamilton.
Hello.
Puce Chan.
Hello.
And Catty.
Hello.
Right, that's kind of throwing me for a loop. Today we'll be covering some gaming news from this week. Depending on how long that takes, we might be playing a little game that I have thought up. Strip poker. No, it won't really work for a podcast. I'll think of a different game. Right, but before that, what have you been reviewing for Game Grin? Let's start from the bottom, because Dominoid has already shown he can't be trusted to go first. Catty.
To sound like a broken record, I still play Overgrowth. I have now got my fill of Overgrowth. I've played it and beat it on both the hard and the hardest difficulty. My god, that game is good. Now I've clicked with it, it's just so visceral and immediate and fun to beat the living crap out of bunnies, dogs and cats. That sounds awful now. Oh god.
But true.
But yeah, it's... Everything about that game has been thought out. So it's... Some of the fights last literally seconds. You literally knock them to the floor, they hit their head on a rock and are dead. And it is the act of them hitting their head. Like, all the models have a full skeletal system and you can... I've seen characters like wandering around with like broken arms where they've landed funny. It's so good.
So do you have to aim for your kick to knock them into the rock, or are they carrying a rock?
No.
Or does it not have to be a rock each time?
It doesn't have to be a rock each time. In general, it's a bit more, the game kind of works out what the best attack is each time. You can kind of aim vaguely, but for the most part, you're just focusing on the rhythm of the combat, so you're focusing on blocking when you need to and counter-attacking and that sort of thing.
Okay. So, what's your score so far? What do you think?
I don't know. I never decide on a score until I've written the review.
More than 5?
Definitely more than 5.
Okay. Alright, Puce, what have you been working on?
I've just started playing Staxel for a preview. I suppose you'd describe it as a 3D Stardew Valley. It's kind of like Minecraft meets Stardew, really. It's kind of got the freeform exploration of Minecraft, but it's got the structure of a farming game with NPCs that give you tasks to complete, like building certain buildings or... making certain town improvements, that kind of thing. So far, it seems pretty good. It's definitely, you can tell it's definitely not in a finished state. It's an early access release. I've had a bug where it doesn't load my game save properly until I make a fresh save and then go back to it. But other than that, it's been once you're actually in the game, it's been quite interesting. It's got an interesting crafting mechanic, similar to Minecraft. It's a very blocky visual aesthetic, but it actually has tools. If you've ever played Minecraft with mods, it does kind of a thing where you can saw up wood into planks, that kind of thing. And I'm curious as to how far that goes. There seems to be quite a lot of tools, so it'll be interesting to see how that develops. But it's an interesting thing so far.
So your first impressions are kind of positive, and it looks kind of early access because it wouldn't load your game.
Yeah, there's definitely some bugs, but the game itself is promising. So since the iron, the rough edges are out, it'll be good, I think.
Fair enough. And Hamilton, what have you been doing?
Very little, as is my wont. On the non-reviewing aspects, it's just a continuation of what I've discussed in previous episodes. I've been playing a little bit of Monster Hunter. I recently got I have this problem with various strategy games, especially Paradox games, where I don't touch them for months and months and months, and then I go, oh, I'll have a quick game of this, and then that's all I play for the next month. So for me, it is Stellaris, which I've jumped back onto just prior to it getting a new update and a new DLC in a week's time, I believe, as well. And that game is horribly addictive. But the less said about that, the better, because I've gone for days. What I will be reviewing for Game Grin, however, is Dynasty Warriors 9, the open-world Dynasty Warriors title that has only just come out to mixed reviews, but I'll be able to give you more of an impression of what I think when I get my hands on it. To be honest, from when I saw it released, that it was going to be an open-world version of Dynasty Warriors, I wasn't too keen on the idea. I've heard that it has systems like eating food, furnishing random houses so that officers come around to drink tea with you and powering them up, and it's not something that sort of really makes me excited for the game, but we'll see once I jump into it. But that's pretty much it for me this week.
That's not really Dynasty Warriors if it's doing that, is it? Because isn't the whole point of Dynasty Warriors supposed to be, don't think, just kill everything?
Yeah, press square and triangle until everything in front of you dies.
I've been seeing some coverage, particularly Jim Sterling, who I know is a big fan of the series, and he's not been giving it very many positives. There was some footage he showed today of literally just, he was out hunting some tigers, and they were just clipping through mountains.
I mean, it's never really been mechanically an impressive series, but we'll see.
It's been a square and triangle series.
Yeah.
But Dominoid, what have you been up to this week?
So I've been playing some more Molten Armor. I'm going to have to actually bite the bullet and write a review on it at some point soon. You remember how I said I was really hoping it was going to be a slow burner and it was going to get really good? It didn't. It's not very good. I feel bad when I have to say negative things about a little one-man indie title, which this is, but ultimately it's just not very fun. The translation is really poor. The mechanics are bad and poorly explained. The graphics are crude. It's really hard to say something nice about it. I didn't even get a physical version, so I can't even say, well, it makes a very good coaster. But I've been playing a bit more Super Mario Odyssey. I've completed the game now, and like the last few Mario titles, there's almost more to do after you've completed the game than when you're actually playing it. Because there's, I think I got about 250 odd moons whilst playing the game, and now I'm collecting more moons, and I've got about 600 now. It's very nicely done, and also. Not directly Game Grin related, but off the back of MZ's article about Valentine's games, I have picked up a copy of Stardew Valley, because everybody's been talking about that, and I wanted to see what the fuss was about. And it's an incredibly odd game. It's really good, but I can't describe why it's very good.
I don't know why you think it's good. I didn't really enjoy my playthrough.
I noticed that. You just basically ran out of energy and then got sort of sluggishly walking back to town, which is kind of horrible. But I think once you get to grips with the energy mechanic that it doesn't bother explaining to you, it does get quite nice. It's just this really quaint little, I'll go and do this thing for a little while. And there's not necessarily any specific point to it, but there's enough objectives and quests that I don't get annoyed. I do still get lost, but I think that just goes without saying with me.
Yes, you kind of get lost in elevator shafts.
Pretty much. And it has been pointed out to me by one of the stream viewers that it's the first time they've ever seen somebody get lost in a 2D platform game.
Well, those early Sonic games were expensive.
That was my point too. Nobody believes me.
The Sonic Advance ones, not so much. Right, personally... Sorry?
No, I was just about to tell you about the time I got lost when I was playing Pong. But that's a story for another day, I think.
You were carrying around a Pong machine. Right, myself, I've been playing a few games in VR using the V-Ridge software. Basically, it turns your phone into a Vive. The quality depends on your phone. So when I was playing Elite Dangerous, mainly Elite Dangerous, the text is not very easy to make out, even on a S8 Plus. I've also tried House of the Dying Sun. The text is a bit better there. Knee Deep is can't really go into that because my controller won't work using it except for the square button. And Race the Sun, that's pretty good in VR. So I've been writing up something about V-Ridge. Playing more Metro 2033 Redux for the diaries. I played Sunset Overdrive for a So I Tried. That was the one game I wanted on the Xbox One.
That was the one game I wanted on the Xbox One. I bought it 6 months ago and still haven't played it.
It's really quite fun. It's the third person shooter with lots of fun traversal methods, more running and grinding mainly. Yeah, I had fun with it for half an hour. Also trying to think of something to write about Final Fantasy XII, The Zodiac Age. I played it for about 20 minutes today and combat is pretty awful. And if you turn on the subtitles, I tweeted that it's about a third of the screen is blocked by a black bar, but it's more a quarter of the screen. But still, a fair chunk of the screen is blocked by a black bar during cutscenes where you want to see all the nice, pretty graphics. It's insane.
Can't render those and the subtitles at the same time.
Well, the curious thing is the black bar is more of a shaded bar during the game. But the cutscenes, if you're deaf, then you don't get to see all the things that people who don't have the subtitles on get to see.
That's rather upsetting. Speaking as somebody who genuinely is hard of hearing and does usually play games with the subtitles on in case I miss things, that's really sad to see. It's disability discrimination, basically.
Yeah, I tweeted a couple of pictures of during cutscenes where this huge black bar is there even when there's nothing on the screen or when there's only a single line and it's not even using up all of the available space. And then another picture of just the shaded bar, which would have worked for the cutscenes. The thing is, the opening credits are actually on the cutscenes and in a white and black text. So you can see white and black text during the cutscenes. They just chose to put the subtitles on this huge black bar. Really baffled me.
Yeah, it's definitely no choice.
Particularly since, as you were just saying, it's pretty universal that white text with a black border is visible on everything. That's almost like UI design 101.
Yeah. Well, isn't it basically any text with a contrasting colour border should be visible in some way?
Should be, but there's this really old image of a multicoloured background with white and black text on the front showing that it's perfectly seeable, on top of any of the colours. Yes, why would Square Enix, of all people, know that? And it's not like they have the money to do the focus research. Right, let's get started with the news. Fear Effect Sedna, the release has been dated. It's the third game in the Fear Effect series, produced by Sushi Games, through the Square Enix Collective. It's been in development for about 2 years after its Kickstarter, and it's coming out the 6th of March. Hopefully I'll be getting my key before then, because I backed it on Kickstarter.
I never played any of the original Fear Effect games. Are they, what sort of game is it? Is it it's like a strategy game, is it not?
The original games were third person with actual video backgrounds. Yeah, I suppose they were third person. You walked around and shot people and tried to avoid gruesome deaths. The video on the Sedna release date trailer kind of shows what to expect in the series. If you fall into a spike pit, it will show you an animation, it'll stop showing you the gameplay and cut to an animation of them falling quite gorily into a pit full of spikes.
Well, I do like a nice gruesome, so I think that sounds like my kind of game.
Yes.
It's some Fear Effect 1 footage, so the PS1 era, and aside from the fact that that woman had a flat anime face, which is amazing, it looks sort of Resident Evil in the sense that like the camera's fixed and you walk around individual rooms and the camera just sort of follows you around.
Yeah, sorry Cassie, your microphone's playing up again, cutting in and out.
Yeah, the movement, it was very Resident Evil-esque, the original game.
Tank controls.
Yeah, tank controls, and like I said, it was there was lots of animated stuff in the background rather than still images like Resident Evil 1. So, but it's that kind of exploration, walk around type of deal.
And it's kind of like Tomb Raider, where there's some sort of mystical mumbo jumbo going on in the plot. I think in the second one you had to rescue someone from hell at one point. Vaguely remember that.
My recollections are very hazy. I have played them, but a long time ago. And the fact that I can't remember them probably says something about either me or the games.
Well, in this game it's Inuit mythology. Sushi Games are also remastering the original Fear Effect, calling it Fear Effect Reinvented. That'll be coming to Switch, PS4, Xbox One and Windows at some point. Not much details about that. Right, next thing I want to talk about is this mobile version of PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds.
The first thing I want to say about it is the performance looks a lot better than the PC release at launch.
Oh, we'll never know what the first thing was. Or the second, third, or any other thing. It's kind of batshit insane, but then that's kind of how PUBG tends to work, so that's obviously what they're going for.
I have to admit, the video does. It does look quite accomplished. Like they actually know what they're doing.
Yeah, I'm not really sure how well that game style or gameplay will actually feel with touch controls on a mobile screen, but as a translation of the PC game, it looks pretty solid, to be honest. And I'm surprised. I was expecting it to be much lower effort than it seems to be.
Card game.
Was that the first thing that you wanted to say, Puce? Because we never heard what that was.
Oh, sorry. No, I didn't realise I cut out. I was going to say that as a port of the PC version, visually, the performance is a lot better than the PC release, which is surprising to say it's on a mobile.
Does anyone know how good mobile networks are in China? Because this is only coming out in China.
That's a good point. What's the average network speed?
Because I imagine if it's not great, there will be massive lag problems in this. Because there already are in the PC game.
I've just checked, by the way. My fiance is a mobile network engineer. Apparently, China have very good telecommunications. Predominantly because it's all quite new. So where they've sort of recently developed, they've got newer technology than we've got in a lot of places because of the fact that they haven't had to upgrade existing technology. They've just built from the ground up. And of course, state-owned. So the state are very rich.
Interesting.
Just thought you might want an answer.
Yeah. I'm not sure, actually, now sort of getting into some of the gunplay bit of this trailer, I'm not sure it would make much difference because it looks incredibly slow in comparison to the PC game.
Well, there's no mouse controls. Although you can, there's a program BlueStacks which lets you play, it lets you use Android apps on a PC, so someone could potentially use that to basically win at PUBG.
At that point, why not just play PC PUBG?
This is true. Or maybe they just want to troll everyone on the mobile version.
I mean, they control everyone on the PC version. I'm pulling this stat completely off the top of my head, and I'll go check it in a second, but haven't they banned something like 1 million accounts in China alone in the last 2 months or something?
They've banned a heck of a lot of accounts, yeah. Can't remember if I read that it was specific to China, though. Sorry, I'm kind of stalling, waiting for Alex to come back. His router, he had to restart his router.
BattleEye banned more than 1 million PUBG cheaters in January. So it was worldwide, but that's 1 million people in a month that got banned.
That's kind of amazing. Like, there's a lot of online games out there that don't even have 1 million players to start with. How many players do they have? Because didn't they make something like 14 million or something? So that's like a good fraction of their player base, isn't it?
It's actually worse than that, because by December 28th, they'd banned in total 1.5 million bans. And then in January alone, so from February last year to, even November November 2016 to December 2017, they banned 1.5 million. And then in January alone, they banned another 1 million people.
So am I in a minority now by having never been banned from PUBG?
I think so.
It's a very good question. Right, from one game that's getting more and more players each day and soon to be mobile players, to a company that's been removed off of Steam. Incel Games, the developer of Guardians of Ember, Otherworld, and Wild Busters, apparently, the CEO sent a memo out to everyone saying that the Wild Busters revenue has not met expectations, and they felt that it's because they did not have a review score on Steam. On day of release, they only had 6 reviews. And if I alone count the people in IME and Incel, I count more than 6 people, the email said. Apparently they'd sent an email earlier telling employees to buy and review the game. So they were reminding people that although they could not force them to write a review, but they should not have to. Because if they don't get reviews, it could ultimately cost jobs. So I am asking you either of the following: buy the game and present me with a receipt upon Friday night for which you will be reimbursed, or explain to me tomorrow why you do not wish this. This email
we can't force you to do. But we're forcing you to do it, or explain why not.
Yes. This was from the middle of December, this email went out. So it was leaked to the Steam subreddit. And a day later, a Valve employee posted into the Guardians of Ember Steam community, saying that Incel Games has been removed from Steam. Because of that they'd identified unacceptable behavior involving multiple Steam accounts controlled by the publisher of the game. So they were found fixing their reviews, their review score, and punished.
Good. That's unacceptable.
Yes, the question is what happens if they investigate, say, Activision or Sega or a big name?
They should also be pulled from Steam, or at least temporarily suspended.
But then where do you draw the line of this person works for Activision? Maybe not on this game, but they've left a review, but they still work for Activision. So I think when it comes to it, with Incel Games, it's a small-ish company. But I think when it comes to those bigger ones, they have to be a little bit more careful about it.
I suppose, yeah, if a bunch of Activision staff review a game, then it's going to make up a quarter of a percent of the review scores. But from the sounds of it, that company's employees were making basically all of the reviews, which is potentially where the difference would be.
From the comments in the thread, someone has gone and checked out, or multiple people have gone and checked out the reviews that are on Wildbuster, and found that lots of reviews were posted on or around the 14th of December, which was, again, when this memo was sent out.
No, that's just a coincidence. That was also National Review A Game You Worked On Day. Oh no, wait, no, that was the 17th of December, wasn't it? No, actually they are just
I'm now gonna write that down so I can bleep that.
I'm sorry, but it was funny, right? So I can be let off just this once.
Well, if I do some creative editing, I can make it I can make you say "ers" at the end. There are a bunch of bleep "ers".
Do you want me to just sort of say another word so that you can put it over? Rotters. There you go. Just edit that over the top.
I do wonder how much of this, I mean, Intel Games, or however they specifically want to put in the blame on, did do something wrong, they violated Steam terms of service, etc., etc. But they kind of, I feel a little bit sorry for them, just in the sense that they're a small team trying to make their living on Steam, and that's such a difficult thing to do at the moment if your game gets buried instantly.
But I think we've seen with enough breakout hits that if your game is good enough, it won't get buried. If it got buried, it's probably because it's another game designed by committee of, oh, well, this is popular moment, let's bung it out there. I mean, you look at how many games have gone from like complete obscure game that nobody's heard of, released, and have got, I mean, even PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds counts as that. I know it's a mod for another game, but that's it. It was an obscure mod, and it's gone to be in the biggest game in the world. So it's possible. I think maybe they just have to accept that their game wasn't very good and it didn't get breakout hit. And falsifying reviews, it might sound really harsh, but I don't have sympathy for them, because it clearly is possible with the right content to make a break in the industry. And I hope this leads to cracking down on more companies doing it, because how many games, little indie ones, have you gone on, seen 10 reviews and looked at them and thought, these all seem to be around the same time and have very similar content?
A few times, particularly when they're all written in Russian.
Yeah, I mean, I know for a fact that there's a lot of companies that are paying for reviews, because I do a little bit of freelance work for a little ghostwriting site, and quite often the tasks that they'll be asking for are, write a 200 word review of this product or this game or this thing, please make it look different from the other reviews there and mention the following features.
Something which probably hasn't helped their game is it was an early access MMO.
So it was a bad game. So
it sounds so unique, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's very sad that some people have lost jobs, but ultimately it doesn't sound like we've lost anything from the world of gaming very much.
It was a early access MMO retailing for £30.
I wonder why they didn't get any reviews. I mean, I wonder why no one bought it. I mean, I'm befuddled, quite frankly. It's almost like people don't want to pay £30 for a half-finished game from a team of amateurs.
We're all utterly baffled. But from one company in going down in flames to a PlayStation exclusive re-release that is topping the charts, much to people's surprise. Shadow of the Colossus has topped the UK charts. I believe the multi-format charts, this doesn't actually state. Hamilton suggested we cover this. Thoughts? Is it a surprise that Shadow of the Colossus remake is making bank?
A little. A little after how very mixed everyone's response to Last Guardian was. Because I imagine there's a good percentage of people who are buying this Shadow of the Colossus remake and have never played Shadow of the Colossus, either the original remake or the original release of the game.
The original remake? Eh?
The original release of the game, sorry. Because they released a PS2 game, which was then re-released on PS3, and now it's been released on PS4.
I didn't realise it had been re-released on PS3.
Yeah, it had a HD remaster on PS3 with the ICO.
I thought that was just a re-release. I stand corrected.
Which I
know is 60 frames per second remaster.
Which I personally think is much better because they kept the art style. This new update is kind of, they removed the fog and they removed the, everything looks bright. I don't think it, Shadow of the Colossus is not a bright game.
No, I mean, the new models and the new artwork do kind of look like the same aesthetic. They look kind, I suppose they look more like Last Guardian, though, to be fair, than the original Shadow of the Colossus. But, yeah, I think the most surprising thing to me is like you say, because this is the third release of the game, it's like, surely most people have heard of it by now? Is there really a huge contingent of people that have never heard of it? It's like, I'm pleased it's selling well, but...
I've heard of it, but it's one of those games I've still never got round to playing. And obviously the big twist at the end has already been spoilt for me now. So
and yet somehow it hasn't been spoilt for me.
Sorry?
Somehow it hasn't been spoilt for me, and I've played at least one version of... No, I've played two versions of the game.
It's a good job I didn't say what it was then. But
yeah, thank you.
It is kind of... it's an interesting thing that, like, because of that, like, even though I knew the game and it is a game that I want to play at some point, I haven't rushed out to buy it because it's kind of, well, plenty of other games. I'll get it when it's reduced because, you know, it's not going to have the impact that it had to everyone who played it pre-spoiler. And I kind of assumed that a lot of people would be in that same position as me, that they've either already got it or they are in that same position where, well, it's already been spoiled, so I'll get it later. But clearly not. It's clearly doing really well. So, yeah, that's good. It shows that people are still willing to buy games that are a bit artistic and a bit pretentious rather than just the latest Call of Duty and whatever else is currently fashionable and everyone else is playing online.
My question is, most open world games get a lot of flack for having large areas where there's literally nothing, there's no NPCs, there's just nothing. And yet Shadow of the Colossus is a game where there is 13 enemies.
Yep, that's it. I mean, originally there was meant to be 24, but during development that got reduced and reduced until we ended up with the 13 that we ended up with, 14 that we ended up with. But it's... The world being empty is kind of a character in its own right. It's what lends that game. It's very dense and depressing and heavy atmosphere. It is almost a character in its own right, the world. And I'm pleased that they resisted temptation to alter that too much in the remaster.
Yeah, I think that a lot of the game is thinking about what you've done or what you're going to do. Each time that you go kill a colossus, the general gameplay loop is you go from sort of the home base to a place where you know there's going to be a colossus, you kill the colossus and you come back. And there's no fast travel, you have to do that journey every single time. And it gives you sort of something to think about, especially after the first time you kill this sort of gigantic, huge, beautiful creature that doesn't do anything to you at all. It gives you something. That time is important in the game to like make you think. I think it's just to reflect on what is going on.
Yeah, and even if it's one of those games that is well worth playing. And I'd say that even if you know the twist, because how the game goes from how it starts to that end point is quite unique, and it's quite interestingly done and well put together. And it's why I've always liked Ueda's stuff. And Eco was similar in that it had a really unique feel from the off. And that end sequence at the end, it was earned. And I don't know about Last Guardian because I've not got a PS4 to actually play that yet. But I'm looking forward to when I do, even if it is a flawed game, just because he's so good at atmosphere.
Well, I think we've sold some copies of Shadow of the Colossus.
Doesn't sound like we needed to, though.
It's doing well enough without us.
Which is a surprise, you know, because normally that's the first thing developers say, don't they? You know, it's like, well, this game will never be a success unless you all review it and the cast of the Green Cast all unanimously enjoy it. So it's nice to see somebody that we didn't champion doing well.
Right, from that we go to Hawaii. Aloha.
What, we're all actually going to Hawaii? This is sprung on me. When's the flight?
Can I go get my jazziest shirt then? Just
no, we are now in Hawaii.
It's colder than I thought it'd be.
Yeah, definitely.
It is a bit cold. And also, Ace, I think that hula skirt is a little bit too short for you.
Yeah, you love it. Hawaii is the latest country to consider a loot box bill, which would raise the legal age for certain games to 21. Any game that contains loot boxes.
You heard it here first, everyone. Hawaii is a country.
I just noticed that. That's a good point.
You know what I mean. It's the latest island.
The latest place.
I think the word you're looking for is state.
Government.
But they're the first state to do it. So, I know what it's... Ace, man. Anyway, that's a good call, I would say. Because it is basically gambling, regardless of the fact that it's similar to trading cards. With trading cards, you get a physical thing that you can resell. With loot crates, you don't. So it should be counted as gambling. It should be encouraged to count as gambling only and restricted to over 21s, and then it will end and we can just go back to paying for games.
Well, we won't, because we'll go back to microtransactions.
The exact wording for two of the bills, one House and one Senate, would prohibit the sale of any game featuring a system wherein players can purchase a randomized reward using real money to anyone younger than 21 years old. And the other two bills would require video game publishers to prominently label games containing such randomized purchase systems, as well as disclose the probability rates of receiving each loot box reward.
See, I'd like to see it go a step further. I'd like to see them do what they've done with cigarette packets, so that any games that have loot boxes have to come in a plain brown box with only the name of the game in a sans-serif font on it, and therefore they don't get differentiated from anything else. Because let's be honest, that's pretty much how they work now. They aren't differentiated from anything else. It's just an identikit game by numbers anyway. So let's just go the whole hog and accept that that's the case, and let people making real games do well again. Like Shadow of the Colossus.
Yes, let's let them remake the same game a fourth time.
Maybe they'll
been letting Bethesda do it for years now.
Maybe they'll finally add in all those extra colossi that were left on the cutting room floor.
To be honest, I was kind of hoping they would, or at least some of them, the ones that were more fleshed out, might make an appearance, even if just as Easter eggs, but sadly it doesn't appear so.
Add extra content? What are you mad?
I apparently am. The one thing I find interesting about this is the request to disclose probability rates, because China forces companies to do this already, which made Blizzard renege on how Overwatch loot boxes worked, or at least how they displayed the information. I don't know whether it was just a local client change, but that'd be something that I would like to see anyway. Because we all know the worst item. Well, I would say we all know that the worst items are like 1 in 1,000 or like odds. But didn't we discover that PUBG's crates are something like 1 in 1,000,000? It's even ludicrous odds.
I was listening to that on here. Weren't you saying it was something like the average person, it will take them 70 years to find it?
Yeah.
And the same goes with Battlefront 2, when it was you need to play 40 hours to unlock a single character or something like that. I think it would be interesting if that particular thing does come through, what happens to games that continue going forward with the loot box model, whether they continue making their content exceptionally hard to get to if it becomes so clear that you're never going to get there.
Sobering food for thought. One game that isn't relying on loot boxes, Kingdom Come Deliverance, was released a couple of days ago to mixed reviews. It's currently got 72 on OpenCritic. Our review is currently in progress by Bishop. That's Bishop the Troll, not an actual bishop.
I wonder if he's bashing it.
Steady.
No, I'm just saying, like, other game reviewers are bashing it, and I wonder if Bishop is doing the same. That's all I was thinking.
I'm sure.
I know you've been playing it, Ace. What do you think of it so far?
A very good game with plenty of bugs. It's pretty much Skyrim, but without the magic. You've got horses and swordplay and lockpicking and stealing from people's pockets. Some of the systems are kind of rubbish, like the lockpicking. It's really hard to explain. There's a sweet spot that you have to hover the mouse over. I haven't played it with a controller, so I've been led to believe it's even more difficult. Hover over the spot with the mouse and then turn the lock using keyboard and turn the spot using the mouse, keeping it in the same place. Which, since your key presses move at a different speed to your mouse movements, is not ideal.
What do you think?
Oh, sorry,
go on.
I was going to say the scores on OpenCritic range from 4 out of 10 all the way up to 9 out of 10.
I was put off the moment you said it's Skyrim but without, because as soon as you say a game is the same as another game but without the thing, then you just sort of think, well, can you not just play that other game but not use that feature?
You could, but it's an open world, it's horses, and it's very well written. Most of the voice acting I've encountered is pretty good. It's a bit weird because there's lots of different accents when they're all supposed to have been from the exact same area. I don't know quite what to say about it.
The biggest complaint I've seen that's come up, not necessarily in reviews, but just in people I know who've been playing it, is the saving system can go into a hole and die a death. Any thoughts?
I agree. There is a mod I found out via Reddit for unlimited saving. But basically you have to sleep, like in a Bethesda game survival mode, you have to sleep to save, or you can use a potion called a Savior's... Oh god, I've forgotten the name.
Savior. Is it named after the Cliff Richard song?
No, Savior Schnapps. The problem is that these are not easy to come by. They're expensive to purchase, or you can brew your own once you eventually get to that point. Early in the game, you get 4. So, of course, if you use all of those up, you're pretty much stuffed until you can earn some money.
This might just be how I like playing games, but I don't consider saving something I want to work towards. That's something the game should just give me.
Yeah, to me, it's not something you should have to constantly think about. It should just saving so that you can leave to do something else. It should be something that just happens. It's a key press or a menu option. It's not a hunt for things in the world to let you do it kind of thing.
Well, I've got to say, when I eventually get to a point where I'm coming across money or stealing money, I should say, because I'm not just going to find it lying in all the corpses that I come across, just several of them. I've been playing for about 5.5 hours, and I've kind of just started the open world part of the game. The first 4 hours, at least if you keep dying and failing at things, they're pretty on the rails. You have to go to certain places and do certain things. But once I start getting money, I'm going to hoard like a dragon.
Yeah, one thing I wanted to ask you actually about it was because we showed the first 70 minutes on our Twitch channel, was that the quest seemed quite reactive. It seemed like there was quite a few ways you could approach things, and people seemed to have dialogue related to things that you did. Have you found that the world reacts to you quite well?
Yes, it does. As shown in the clip, you go to your mates and pelt manure at some guy's house, or you can say no to your friends and then get the money that your father's owed a different way, such as beating up the guy yourself, which I did not manage to do. Or just stealing his stealing the stuff that he quote unquote bought from your father back. There's a clip on our YouTube channel of me stealing the axe back after I lost in a fight to him, and he called the law on me.
Oh, that was hilarious.
Yeah, so you miss out on the entire game because there's an achievement for it, but because you were arrested in the starting town.
They misspelled jail there, though.
I don't think they paid too much attention to that bit because nobody will ever see it.
But if they spell it wrong, if they spell it wrong there, they probably spelled it wrong everywhere else as well. And that's just... If they're going for this historical accuracy, what's with the Americanization of the spelling?
But there's a potion for saving, Catty.
It's historically accurate in that they could not read to make this game.
You got me there.
I mean, that is kind of... I do like sort of Pius's response there. That it is kind of it's a small thing to be worried about when there's magical potions that can save the state of the world. That's basically along the same lines of the people who complained that Doctor Who can't be a female because, well, any reason, quite frankly, when you're talking about a time-travelling alien.
To be fair, my quote was literally as equally facetious, just because of all the people who were complaining about the saving system, by saying, "Oh, it's really realistic." No, it really isn't. They've got some bits. They've messed up other bits, though.
Well, it's,
the accents are quite bad, but amusingly so.
Well, there's all manner of accents there. You and your girlfriend Bianca grew up in the same town, and yet you have a British accent and she has a not a British accent.
The majority of the ones that I heard sounded kind of like a sort of Tesco value Sean Bean.
That'll be Henry's father, you heard that. I mentioned that they couldn't read to build to make the game. Henry, as a blacksmith's son, cannot read. You have to go and pay someone to teach you to read. And I was talking to Bishop about money, and then he mentions one of his missions that he was doing. I need you to go and get a horse. Option A, buy a horse. Option B, steal a horse. Huh, wonder which I'll do. Because a new horse is 2,000 groschen. Whereas he could sell his old horse for 30 groschen.
Could you steal 2,000 groschen and buy a horse? Technically, then, you haven't stolen a horse.
Yes. He said, what is this, horse stop? Right, so I don't think I've convinced anyone to buy Kingdom Come Deliverance.
No, but you have convinced us to watch you playing it, so I look forward to the next video.
I'm actually... I've been waiting to get to this open world part so that I can do a bit of role-playing, do a video diary series. Just be a farmer or a woodcutter or something. But we'll see what happens with that. And we've come to the end with Hamilton never returning after he reset his router because his internet died. Presumably because he restarted the router.
Hamilton's router.
F. You know, to pay respect.
We got that. It was funny that you didn't explain it.
Well, people unfamiliar with that meme might think I was swearing. Anyway, thanks for joining me, Dominoid, Puce, and Ketty. You can find us and tweet to us on Twitter at Greencast. You can follow Game Grin on Twitter at Game Grin, or find us on Facebook or the site or basically anywhere. Just Google for it. You can listen to the Greencast on GameGrin.com, iTunes, or Stitcher. And make sure to tune in to Twitch, Mixer, or YouTube from 8 p.m. GMT each day for our streams. And while you're at it, game on.